This is Tales of Northern Michigan's Past with Christopher Struble, and this is part two of his conversation with Jim Gillespie and Blissfest.
So, yeah, I wasn't disappointed in any of these. You know, we called it the Legacy Act. I was like booking these guys as our Legacy Act, and that was kind of a thing for a while. Nowadays, it's kind of, we're running out of Legacy Acts. They're dying off. So the programming is slightly different. We don't call ourselves like a headliner kind of dependent festival, but they're all quality acts. I mean, we got Trevor Hall. I was trying to get him for quite a few years. He's kind of like a Michael Fronte. He's really good. Elephant Revival. I've been trying to get them. So a lot of these people I've been trying to get. I was trying to get. So it takes several years sometimes to get them.
Sure, depending on other schedules. And then you're still pulling Michigan acts, too. I mean, we have some top-notch quality musicians up here.
We always do local acts, regional acts, Michigan acts, national acts, international acts.
Your band plays, I'm guessing.
Dr. Goodhart's played since 1983 when we formed the original Dr. Goodhart's Home Remedy Band. Of course, I've been in all of the different configurations, but we've played Blissfest since 1983.
I didn't get the
year. We used to be on the main stage, and now we're allocated to
you're pushed up.
we're on like the song tree stage.
Well, I haven't played with you at Blissfest, but I had the luxury. We used to do the half birthdays with Dr. George Coburn, our mutual friend. That's how we met. And we had those great jam sessions out at his house, and that's when I got to sit in with you and your band and Robin Lee Barry. And
that was a fun afternoon. That's fun. Yeah, that's fun stuff.
So you're a hell of a player. I love watching you. Obviously, there's been countless other musical festivals years prior to Blissfest and after, but I think you've inspired and provided like a template maybe for others looking to keep the spirit of live music. Food and the creative arts alive, these are things that kind of fallen by the wayside with, the cell phones and all these things. I think that era of live music has suffered so much over the years. We had Kenny Olson on from Kid Rock, and Kenny's been a player for, you know, his whole life, but we were running down some statistics. In the 70s, I think there were 300 bands that had top number one hits that year. Hmm. In the 80s, it went down to like maybe 100 bands. This last 5 years, you've only had three bands that have had top number one hits. It's performers.
It's
producers and songwriters, and they get a face, they get a voice, they get auto-tune. And they make somebody a star.
They get promoted. Yeah.
And this person's how you kind of, so you know, keeping that alive. But I feel that your group has been very creative and progressive. Not just by, you don't just host one annual event, right? I think when I moved up here in 2008, I've attended multiple events you've sponsored and co-sponsored with organizations like Crooked Tree, for instance.
Right, right. The festival has allowed us to do year-round programming.
Yeah.
You know, it's kind of like our mission. We could call it our mission work because it doesn't necessarily make money. But the festival is our primary service, but it's also our primary fundraiser. Mm-hmm. So we make money at the festival, and then we spread it around during the course of the year to present concerts. We did a lot of concerts at Crooked Tree. We had square dances. We sponsored the Harbor Street Music. And we got we got a grant. When I started working full-time for the festival, we got a grant from the National Endowment for the Arts to start the Harbor Celtic Festival. And we did that for about 4 or 5 years. And that's where I kind of got involved and met George.
Well, this is Emmett County.
Right, right. I had that connection with Robert Emmett, which I didn't know about Robert Emmett. And George was the person that turned me on to that whole connection to the Robert Emmett himself. And so that was great. It was exciting to have that experience and learn about Robert Emmett.
George was just a wealth of knowledge with everything. The funny thing, when I eulogized him a little bit at one of his events, it's like George would make friends with anybody who had like interest, regardless of his age. George never grew up.
Right. He could connect with anybody.
Anybody. If you had a like interest, you were his contemporary. He considered you his contemporary. You know, he was just such a great contributor to all these events too.
Exactly. Yeah. So the festival has always been kind of the cash cow for the Blissfest Music Organization in terms of being able to take some of that money and pour it back into the community and to enrich the community, which we really have done some great enrichment in terms of being able to get music in the community, and I think it's inspired a lot of people to play.
Sure.
I mean, that's part of our goal, is to try to get people to play music themselves. There's a musician in everybody. Some people don't think so, but I mean, went back and, you know, we started with just the main stage, and then we added a second stage, and then we added a third stage, and then we added a drum kiva. And that's where a lot of people started their musical journey, at the drum kiva. They it's like, I can do this.
I can make rhythm.
Yeah, right. So we kept adding, and then we added the song tree, and then we added the Michigan stage. So we had all those venues going at the same time now at the festival.
Got enough space to keep the sound segregated like that?
Yep, that's a bit of a challenge.
Sure.
But especially at night when the sound guys go crazy. It's like, stop that. Well, the stage guys are turning their amps up, and I gotta compensate. So, yeah, I know that. Make them turn it down. So anyway, so we have those multiple venues going concurrently.
That gives people a chance
variety, diversity.
Diversity.
Oh, I said it again. Diversity, equity, and inclusion. Yeah, the Bliss Fest is all about that. I mean, it's all about music is a universal language, right?
It absolutely is.
And it connects people. It's a connecting force. It doesn't pull people apart like some politicians seem to like to do. This is a connecting thing. That's what's so cool about the Bliss Fest. It's such a cool vibe. You know, you go there and you just got this smile on your face all weekend. You know,
everybody goes there
for
that.
It's because the music is just like infusing everywhere you go. There's music everywhere.
If you're in a pissed off mood at Bliss Fest, you've got some baggage you should have left somewhere.
You need to take some drugs or something.
Leave that below the 45th parallel, right?
Right. So,
and then I think one of the performances, I think where you were responsible, I'm pretty sure, for bringing Jeff Daniels here at least once. I saw him at Cricket Tree, and you know, Jeff Daniels, the famous actor, Dumb and Dumber, but a very prolific musician.
Yeah, we had him several. I think we had him at Harbor Auditorium once.
You did?
And we had him at Crooked Tree.
Yep.
And we had him at the festival.
Now, the one thing I'll tell you, I saw two of the three performances, and the most impressive one for me was at Crooked Tree, because you sold out, and then you booked a second show.
Yeah.
And very few people, you know, we have a small community, so I sold out the first show. He did the second show, and this is the third time I've seen him now at this point. But he sets up with Brian Vander Ark, who's a contemporary of mine from Lansing. He's the leader of the Verve Pipe. Verve. And they got up, and they realized that the auditorium, the acoustics, and the amount of people in there for the second performance allowed them to completely unplug their acoustic guitars.
They went acoustic.
They took away their microphones, and they just went truly acoustic.
Right.
And it was, I mean, the hair on my arms is standing up right now.
It was a good room. It's a good room for that.
It's a good room.
And it was cool that they did that.
And Jeff had brought that guy with him. He likes to pick up musicians. And this guy was from Chelsea, down by where he lives.
Right.
And this guy played every stringed instrument in the room and just tore it apart. And he's just an unknown musician that Jeff picked up along the way.
Yeah, that was a good show.
It was a great show. And I learned tricks back when I was hanging with Kenny Olsen and a lot of the rock stars he introduced me to, is don't approach them. Go hide out by the food table, they're going to come to you. So wherever the drinks and the food are, the musician will come to you.
Yeah, they'll show up.
And then you get to talk to them on a more relaxed basis.
Yeah, hospitality is important. In fact, Bliss Fest has a lot of musicians know the Bliss Fest as really a great hospitality festival.
Because we
kind of have our own hospitality that we do. We don't, a lot of festivals just have them go up into the food vendors, you know. Mm-hmm. But we actually
have like a green room or a green.
We have a hospitality area where we feed the musicians and we feed the staff and some of the main volunteers. But the artists really love that. They love to get that hospitality. It's like their own little caterer, you know.
Hey, I love raiding people's refrigerators when they have me watch their house. So free meal is a free meal.
There's a refrigerator that says beer on it, and the artist can like open it up, and there's like, you know, every kind of beer you can imagine.
I'm going to come out and check this out here.
We started this thing called the Taste of Bliss, which has gone crazy. It's basically we get a temporary liquor license, and we get like 10 different microbrews, and they come and they basically take over one of our big shade tents, and people come and we give them a glass and we give them tickets, and they get to go sample beer, and that's on Saturday from noon to like 4, and it's a great It's a great event. It's It's called the Taste of Bliss.
I'm just putting that in my phone right now, so that I'm marking that.
I think I have an extra ticket, Chris. You should come if you.
You know, you've invited me out so many times. I swear to God, I'm so embarrassed to say this, man.
I'll give you a free ticket.
With all the stuff I have going on in the summer, but I've got to make it out there.
Yeah.
And my joke is, my favorite place to swim in, or just get away from people on Sundays, my one day off. I always go to Sturgeon Bay. But the one time you don't necessarily want to swim in Sturgeon Bay is after the festival. Sometimes you get about 6,000 people that haven't bathed for a couple of days, and they all kind of jump in, and you put patchouli's everywhere. And I've had some strange hitchhikers try to get a ride into town. It's always entertaining, though.
You know, on Monday, I usually go to Sturgeon Bay, Monday after Blissfest, and I usually go there and skinny dip in the morning.
I definitely got to make it out for an event. I mean, music's my passion. History of music.
Yeah, I mean, I got a few spare tickets that I can. But I guess I should turn you onto that, and you could come anytime. You know, just come and go.
Yeah, that'd be great.
Because it's gonna be a fun show.
Some of your personal favorite acts, like so you mentioned some of the ones that people know and would be, but who kind of stand out to you as just like, oh my God, what did I just see?
There's been so many. I was looking at the list here. I mean, I'd have to go back. I mean, I remember some of the names, of course. You remember the names of there's so many acts that we've gotten that are not household names, but they're just incredible players. That, you know, like there was this band once early on called the Cobb Brothers, and they were like Billy Strings before Billy Strings. Mm-hmm. It was a family, and they showed up, and they were all wearing t-shirts that said the Cobb Brothers Destination Unknown, and they were all chewing tobacco.
Oh yeah.
And they were from Wisconsin, cheese country, and they all chewing tobacco, even the 14-year-old fiddle player. And he was fucking amazing.
He just 14, killed it.
14 years old, he was like, looks like Vassar Clemens. I mean, those guys are no longer in existence, you know, or they're, I think actually a couple of them still play in other groups. But I mean, I discovered these groups. Sometimes I started going to the Ontario Conference of Folk Festivals. And that's another good story. The Ontario Conference of Folk Festivals was held in Ontario all the time, but it brought in artists from all over Canada, so from all the provinces. So it was a showcase. I could go and check them out. And so for many years, we've had the notoriety of being the festival with the highest Canadian content of any festival in the United States.
That's a title.
It's a title. And we get four or five acts from Canada every year.
How about with the...
It's tough to get them across the border sometimes.
Well, I was going
to
say, what about with the tariffs now? You're going to have to be paying them extra?
I don't know about musicians. Well, it's not only the tariffs, it's getting their visa and then dealing with the taxes, because you're supposed to, you know, pay the withholding taxes on these guys too, so it's crazy. But
international withholding taxes, that's another fun thing for a group of guys just want to enjoy music in the woods of northern Michigan.
I know. And so that's always part of the equation, but we would find some amazing acts. But then we started going to the... International Folk Alliance, which was an American version, and it's like that, it's huge. So we've discovered a lot of really quality, you know, acts that aren't household names, and some of them are Grammy winners, but they're not that well known, but they're mm-hmm. really talented.
Sure.
And we go to this, we go to it every year, the Folk Alliance International. And their main offices are in Kansas City. They used to be in Memphis, so we'd go down to Memphis, and they move it around. Like next year, it'll be in New Orleans, so I'm definitely going to go. I guess it's fun when they have it in New Orleans. They've had it in New Orleans a couple times, but there's probably 500 of people who are representing events like festivals and concerts, and there's probably 1,500 artists. So there's like. They have like 7 or 8 main conference rooms that are fully sound stuff, and that's like it showcase groups from like 4 to 10. And then at 10 o'clock at night, it shifts to the non what do they call them non professional showcases or whatever. They're basically in individual rooms in these hotels. 50 rooms.
All full of?
All switching out every 20 minutes with artists and bands.
Oh, man.
And some of them have a little sound system. Some of them are acoustic. It's insane. It's insane, I'm telling you. And there's all, it's all good stuff. It's all good stuff. And it's all from all around the country. And some of them are international as well. They bring them in from. So that's what, that's kind of one of the, one of the big resources we have to go and look for entertainment. Mm-hmm. So that's, you know, the current musical director, Caroline Barlow, who I trained, and we have kind of this sort of a formula, but we always try to get a Celtic group, a Cajun group, you know, a bluegrass group, you know, and legacy acts and stuff like that, and world music group, try to make that diversity all the time. And also we loved groups that would combine things. Like we had this group called Gangsta Grass one year, hip hop bluegrass.
Just mix, killer mix like that.
And then this year we've got a group that's a Celtic bluegrass. They're great, called Jig Jam. They're Celtic.
Fusion music here.
Yeah, innovator, we call it innovators of, you know, roots music.
Uh-huh.
So it's, and a lot of times at festivals, these groups, they connect at a festival like this because they're coming together at like a Bliss Fest, and they meet each other, and they go off and do, you know, projects, like recording projects,
sure,
together, you know, and then create this new innovative genre, create their own genres. So it's kind of this interesting
melting pot of musicians.
Yeah,
there,
I mean,
too.
The melting pot still continues, where these people who are into a particular genre are exposed to a new genre, and they take it to the next level.
It's always
evolving.
Yeah, and I got to imagine you probably get people sending demo tapes in or vetting to try to come in.
Do you know how many
and,
CDs I have?
I can only imagine.
I mean, boxes. In fact, we give them away now. It's like at the festival. It's like you buy a T-shirt, here's a free CD.
Here's a free CD.
There's a box of CDs. Just take a CD. Take two.
Accidentally, you find some box from 1986. You're like, oh, who's this band? Oh, my God, it turned out to be.
Right.
You mentioned volunteers. I mean, what it takes to make this festival happen. On your website, it says up to 1,000 people a year volunteering. Is that correct? I mean, is that pretty accurate?
Yeah, 700 to 1,000, depending on the year. I mean, there's a lot of stuff that gets done during the festival and beforehand. You know, we're basically turning that 200 acres into us. The largest city in Emmett County for a weekend.
Yep. You
know, it's about 8,000 people when you add it all up. You know, I mean, we can have 5,500 paid tickets, but then there's probably between the kids 12 and under, that's probably another 1,000. You know, and then there's all the vendors, there's all the musicians, there's all the volunteers. So probably, you know, in terms of the number of people that are on site, peak time on Saturday night, there's probably 7,000 or 8,000 people.
7,000 or 8,000 people, and that's a lot of people to take care of when you think of just bathrooms, showers, water.
Yeah, that's a couple hundred porta-johns, buddy.
Yeah, a couple hundred porta-johns.
Yeah, it's like $35,000 worth of porta-johns.
Well, I was just watching the video, too, the catastrophe that happened at Woodstock 99. We talked about it with Kenny, too, when he was on here. He was there just before they burned the place down. Part of that whole fiasco was just because the planning was so poor. They didn't have security. People were paying $5 a bottle for a bottle of water, 12 ounces. It was 103 degrees.
Right.
All these logistical things just went to hell.
You got to be ready
for it.
I mean, that's a nice thing. We've been able to develop our facility. So we've got a lot of investment in infrastructure. I mean, we've got 3 wells. We've got all kinds of infrastructure now, which is nice. Really nice. I mean, back in when we started, we had zero infrastructure. We were basically running it on 2 generators, you know. Now we got lots of power, you know, and lots of everything.
Do a lot of the musicians stay on for the weekend? Do they stay around? Do they hang out? Do they just play? Are there accommodations?
The national touring acts, not so much, because they're probably there for one.
Booked again.
One show, and then they're off, you know, to some other place that's routed them. I mean, we work with some of the other outdoor festivals that are in the region. You know, there's like up in Bayfield, Wisconsin. There's a big festival there, and so we work with the ones that are regional that they can kind of get to in a reasonable amount of time if they're in a tour bus or something like that. So the big names, they're in and out. But usually the regional acts and the local acts and the Michigan acts, they're there for the weekend, and so they're hanging out and having a great old time.
I guess that's one question I was going to ask you, too. So people can come for the day? They can get a ticket for the whole weekend?
Yeah, you can get day tickets on Saturday and Sunday. Not on Friday.
But not on Friday.
Saturday and Sunday you can get day tickets, and then the weekend. Most people come and camp. It's just such an experience. And we've got shuttles to the beach, shuttles to the store.
Oh, I didn't know you had shuttles to the beach. That's nice.
Oh, yeah. You don't have to get in your car.
We don't want people driving after they've been possibly taking ecstasy and attacking Richie Havens. We're going to shuttle them.
Exactly. You don't have to even get in your car, and because the police do cruise around the area.
But all in all, it really is a family-friendly event.
And that's what we've always pushed, the fact that it's family, and now it's like three generations, you know, all the hippies and their kids, and now their kids have kids, and so it's a family affair. I mean, a lot of people, they come and they've got their extended family and their kids' kids, and grandpa and grandma are there.
I know people that love bringing their children on, showing them what they've experienced.
Yeah, we got this huge kids area. Yeah, I mean, I wish I was exposed to that when I was a kid.
It'd be killer, wouldn't it?
Yeah, I mean, wow.
I'm still ready at my age. I'm all right.
Yeah, I know. It's great. It's a great time. So the kids really love it. The kids just love it.
Yeah, and what other kind of vendors do you have out there? So you have food, and then you have
we've got about 16 or 17 food vendors, then there's like 50 craft vendors, there's healing arts vendors like massage therapists and palm readers, and you name it, we got it. There's all kinds of programming around that, you know, there's workshops. There's probably about 100 different musicians and acts. There's probably 150 workshops. There's craft workshops, there's music workshops, dance workshops, Sufi dancing. I mean, there's all kinds of, there's so much going on. You've got to come.
I'm coming.
You'll be like going, what the hell is this going on over here? Whoa, what's this going on over here? And there's so many cool venues. You know, if you want to listen to a singer-songwriter, go to the Song Tree. You know, every 20 minutes it swaps out. If you want to listen to a main stage act, go to the main stage. Second stage is basically a dance tent. So it's crazy wild dancing. And third stage is a real kind of a, I love the third stage because it's kind of a smaller venue, but we pack some really cool bands in there. And the drum keep, if you want to go wild and crazy with drumming, of course, they've got all kinds of workshops going on there. So there's all this is just going on all at once, you know.
It's funny you mentioned the drumming. It brings to mind, we were in Manhattan last spring, and when you're walking through Central Park on Sunday, probably most other days too, but you can have up to 200-300 drummers right in Central Park. Everybody's invited. If you can kind of keep time, otherwise they just drown you out with their noise, but you know, all these drummers and percussionists all playing
I'm
all
putting
afternoon.
You on my comp list right now, Chris. Yes.
All right.
How do I spell your last name?
S-T-R-U-B-L-E.
S-T-R.
It's your... S with trouble or Saint Ruble? Since my wife is Bella Russian, I go Saint Ruble sometimes. I get letters in the mail for Christopher Stumble, which is right when I was drinking a little bit more last month. That was interesting. Christopher Stumble.
Christopher Stumble.
And then one just came from a company, Christopher Struggle. So that's what they call me at City Park Grill now, Struggles. What's up, Struggles?
Struggles is here. He's sitting in the Hemingway chair. Yeah.
This is Tales of Northern Michigan's Past with Christopher Struble. Tune in next time to the third and final part of Chris's conversation with Jim Gillespie and Blitzfest.